Eric Metaxas here. Please join me in a life-saving mission to set Sudanese slaves free through Christian Solidarity International. Since 1995, CSI has freed more than 100,000 women and children from years of bondage and abuse. Your $250 gift frees, feeds, and heals these captives and sets them on a path to a new life in freedom. Please help us free another slave now. Call 888-253-3522, 888-253-3522, or click the CSI banner at MetaxasTalk.com, MetaxasTalk.com.
To the Eric Metaxas Show.
They say it takes a big man to admit he's wrong, but I say it takes an even bigger man to admit he's never wrong.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you that bigger man, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, sports fans. This is the Eric Metaxas Show, or is it the Charlie Kirk Show? Who knows? When you're dealing with the grand old man of media, Charlie Kirk, it's hard to feel like he's not interviewing you. Am I right, Charlie? And by the way, Charlie, welcome.
Thank you. Yes. You know, all my many decades of experience in radio makes me well positioned to speak on these topics.
Man, I remember you made your bones. I remember in the when Ike was going against Adlai Stevenson. I will just never forget that.
You got your wires crossed. When Harry Truman brought put up the newspaper.
Oh,
and he said,
you were there. Dewey defeats Truman. No.
I handed him the newspaper.
That's incredible. It's hard to believe that you're drinking the blood of young people to look so young yourself. Let's get serious for just a second here. We have an historic moment happening in America. You're close to the president and close to other people who are close to the president, and you have a particular perspective. I want to continue talking to you about that from our first hour, because I think it's important for those who do not have that kind of access to hear what's going on the inside. So let's start there. What do you see happening around the president? What are his spirits? What is the sense of where we go from here?
Well, I think that he's in a fighting spirit, and that's exactly the correct posture. All the irregularities, the fraud, the issues, the upload issues, He is not going to take the 1960 Richard Nixon tact where he just concedes for the betterment of the country, which I actually think we're still living. We're living the consequences of Richard Nixon not contesting the 1960 election.
Okay, look, not everybody knows about that. I've referred to it a couple of times on this program, but help my audience.
Remember, I was there.
Audience, on what?
I was there.
Yeah, I keep forgetting that you were there. You were old back then. So tell us. What happened in 1960? Not that I haven't covered it in my own books, but go ahead.
Well, I'll do it as quickly as I can. Richard Nixon running up against John F. Kennedy. Richard Nixon was actually the sitting vice president. It was a super tight race. Joseph P. Kennedy, John F. Kennedy's father, was a bootlegger, bad guy, anti-Semite, super rich, realized that it was going to come down to one city in one state, calls the mayor of Chicago, Mayor Daley, and basically makes a deal and says, I need you to start canvassing cemeteries, do what you know you do in Chicago. Get my son to be elected president. And it's one of the most well-documented, well-known instances of voter fraud at the last moment to get a certain candidate elected. And the reports start coming out. JFK is called the winner. And Richard Nixon decides not to fight it and to concede for the betterment of the country and for what he thinks a healing part for America. I think that was a mistake. It was stolen by Democrat thugs, and they've been doing it ever since. And a lot of JFK's decisions in the early parts of his presidency were pandering to the wishes and the demands of Mayor Daley, whether it be the railroad decisions, whether it be all sorts of different sort of public policy decisions. That's a different Chicago wrinkle that we could add into it. The point is this, is that problems that are not confronted multiply. That is a rule of life. When you see a problem and you do not confront it, it will multiply and then it will become permanent. And that is exactly what we have seen with Democrat voter fraud over the last 40 or 50 years. It just so happens that Donald Trump is so enormously popular. He was so unpredictable politically, impossible to poll, hard to pinpoint and target, that they needed to now resort to what I think was plan C. This was not plan A or B. Plan A was they were going to win by so much they didn't need this on the margins. Plan C was to stop the voting, get as many ballots as you can that were questionable, no signature verification, win on the margins, and dominate the mechanics of politics in four urban cities.
Okay, there's a lot of questions that come out of this. But before I get to those, I want to say what Nixon did in 1960, it kind of reminds me of what some of the patrician class, the Prussian military, did with Hitler. They were too civilized to fight this thug. And when they realized that he and his fellow criminals had taken over the great nation of Germany, it was too late. So there's a time to be civil, and there's a time to understand that if you're too civil, your throat will be cut and your children will be murdered. Nixon did that in 1960 for the good of the country. And I would say when JFK wrote his book, Profiles in Courage, which we know was written actually by his friend Ted Sorensen, and he got a Pulitzer Prize, which is all, it's just despicable, the whole thing. But who ought to have been the first chapter in Profiles in Courage? Obviously, it ought to have been Richard Nixon, except the book was written before 1960. But I'm saying that what Nixon did was a profile in courage. It's what a statesman does. It's what a patriot does. They take a bullet for the team and they live to fight another day. That's precisely the opposite of what Biden would do. We have clearly the election's not been decided, and he's already declared himself president-elect with signage and everything like that. But what Nixon did is an amazing thing. And you're quite right to point out that today is a completely different day. And for Trump to do that would be an act, would be a profile in cowardice. He must do what we know he will do and is doing already, which is to confront this vile abomination of corruption in our electoral system. There is nothing more horrific than in a free country to countenance this kind of thing in one city, much less across the board. So it brings me to my question, Charlie, who do you think, because these would be conspirators, who do you think gave the high sign or made the plan behind the scenes what to do on election night? These are our people. This wasn't an algorithm. Who do you suppose are the mandarins of power on the Democratic side who made these decisions?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, there's a lot of different working theories here, and I think they all might have some element of truth together. And so some people are very focused on the Hammer scorecard, the Dominion voting systems. And I think that actually there's a lot behind that. We've already seen that one of the Dominion voting systems changed 6,000 votes in Michigan from a Republican losing to a Republican winning. We've seen memory stick upload issues in three counties now in Georgia that otherwise would not have been found if it wasn't for the canvassing and the audit in Georgia. I also think that there's a lot to be said, though, about a phrase that I coined called ballot laundering, where there all these ballots were sent out and you enlist 30 or 40 criminals, which it always stuns me. People say, well, voter fraud doesn't exist. I say, we have crimes in every form of society, everything. It's like saying money laundering doesn't exist. They're like, well, I went into my local laundromat. I couldn't see any money laundering. I'm like, yeah, that's the point, is that I counted all their dollar bills. I audited them. I said, well, do you look at their books? Did you talk to their customers? Did you see that guy come with a big thing of cash and say, yeah, you know, wash some of my briefs and my suits? You have to look a little bit deeper with a little more complexity. And ballot laundering is what the New York Times said in 2012. It exists all over. They used to cover this stuff ferociously, which is called granny farming. There was a 1,774% increase in voter registration for people over the age of 90 in Pennsylvania in the midst of a pandemic this year.
Wait a minute. Say that again. Nobody's ever said 1,774% ever.
I say these numbers so often, I feel like everyone knows it by now. So
I know. Well, that's why I'm here, to slow you down and to make you speak to the American public. Say it again. Go ahead.
There was a 1,774% increase in voter registration for 90 plus year olds in the year 2020 in the midst of a pandemic. It's inexplicable. It's not true.
Now, you call this granny farming?
I did not coin that term. The New York Times did, believe it or not, in 2012.
It's very funny, except it's crime. So so you're telling me that's an actual figure, 1,774% increase in voter registration among, say it again?
90-plus-year-olds in the midst of a pandemic.
Yeah, because you can just see them blasting out of their driveways at 100 mile an hour to register during a pandemic, knowing that they might die. That's logical. Hey, folks, when we come back, we will continue our conversation with Charlie Kirk. Don't go away. In a broken stone age dawn, you fly so high. Folks, I'm talking to Charlie Kirk. It's the Eric Metaxas Show, or is it the Charlie Kirk Show? We don't know. Charlie, let me ask you a question for a change. I just asked, who do we think was behind this? And you gave a complex answer. But I guess the point is that there have to be figures, elders in the party at the DNC, who make decisions that we're going to do a wide-ranging multi-state campaign to steal this election. So the question is, who are these people? When the votes stop getting counted suddenly in a number of swing states, or in the number of swing states, clearly that's not a coincidence. Somebody has to be behind that. Do we have any idea who is hiding back in the weeds, who was pulling these levers?
Yeah, I mean, there's some suspects that we all have in mind. My best guess, because this feels like a Chicago operation that was exported to the four major cities, is the Obama political team. My guess is that the Biden team leaned on some of the Obama machinery and experience to do this. I'm talking about the Axelrods, the Jarretts, the Saul Alinsky types. That
Eric Holder.
Yeah, those types, exactly. But understand, this was a multi-year process in getting the right people. Remember, personnel is policy. This is something Republicans and conservatives fail to ever realize. The people you have actually are a reflection of the policy that will happen, is that they won district attorney races. They won secretary of state races. They spent tons of money on changing the way we do balloting. For example, Stacey Abrams might have lost the battle in 2018, but she won the war. Brian Kemp and Raffensperger, the guy that's the Secretary of State in Georgia, they gave Stacey Abrams everything she wanted when she came in with $40 million 18 months ago, when all of us were worrying about Elizabeth Warren versus Beto versus all of this. You know what Stacey Abrams is worrying about? She was suing with $40 million in the bank with a high-priced Washington, D.C. law firm, getting the absentee ballot threshold completely changed. For example, in 2018 and 2016, 4% of all absentee ballots were rejected for lack of signature verification. It's less than half of 1% this election. Now, with more absentee ballots than ever before because of the pandemic, with more people voting by mail, we now have a lower threshold of rejection. So let's pretend it was even just 2%. That's 40,000 ballots that would have been rejected for lack of signature verification and for issues of the balloting. President Donald Trump would win Georgia. He still can. If you just reinstitute the same ballot practices. Now, why did it change? It's because Stacey Abrams came in with $40 million funded through tax credits of Hollywood figures that re-domiciled to Georgia because with their parasitic mind, they want to destroy more states that work. They come into Georgia, write her big checks. The tech billionaires do the same thing. And then Raffensperger and Brian Kemp run to the hills because they don't want to be called the R word in a state that had a, let's just say, complex racial past, and Stacey Abrams gets everything she wants. And all of a sudden, we're, you know, the Republicans are like, oh, it won't really matter. We'll win Georgia by 2 points instead of 3 points. And all of a sudden you realize, no, when these elections come down to 50,000 votes and you're able to have a different threshold of how the actual mechanics of elections are done, then you're going to lose. And the last point I'll say is this, is that the Democrats have employed Sun Tzu's art of war far better than we did. They actually cared about the terrain of which the battle was fought on. We couldn't care less. We're like, well, this is an idea battle. No, it's not. This has nothing to do high taxes, low taxes, defund the police. It's whether or not ballots are going to be counted correctly. Republicans have never cared about that. And now we start to see the consequences of that.
Well, it's funny because the idea that, you know, Chicago, you know, using the dead to vote, going to graveyards and getting names. The idea that Democratic cities are corrupt, it's like a joke. And yet you think, why would we allow something like that to be significant enough that we would joke about it. I mean, what could be more despicable in the United States of America that this could go on? And honestly, you know, if not for Donald Trump, we wouldn't even be looking at this. And if he had won easily on November 3rd or on the morning of the 4th, we might not be looking into this. So I actually, Charlie, see it as a blessing from God that we are able to deal with this and actually drain the swamp. I think that these folks are going to be hoist by their own petard, to quote Shakespeare, or that they're going to, like Haman, to quote the Bible, they're going to build a gallows on which they themselves, from which they themselves hang.
Yeah, I sure hope so. I mean, look, it's voter fraud's well documented. Just go to Duval County in Texas when Lyndon Baines Johnson used to canvass cemeteries. And the old story goes like this, where they used to go through cemeteries at night to correlate old voter registration records. And Lyndon Baines Johnson was walking through the cemetery with one of his political operatives, and they couldn't read the name on one of the gravestones. And they moved to the next one, and LBJ says, "Get over here." Every single person in the cemetery has a right for their voice to be heard in this election.
Okay, now
that's a well-known story in Texas politics.
Right. Well, we know that there was no greater skunk and criminal in the White House than Lyndon Baines Johnson. There's no doubt about that in my mind. But and he has some close competitors, but he wins. But the idea that politics is that dirty game, that ought to be banished from public life. It's really it's a cancer on the body politic we would allow even to ourselves to joke about it or to allow it. It's counter to everything the founders stood for, all of whom were noble men.
Yeah, I have a contrarian opinion here. You might agree or disagree, Eric, but we kind of let this happen in a different sense. When you do not prosecute injustice, then again, problems that are not confronted multiply. When Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and Brennan and Clapper are able to do what they did, then why wouldn't they also execute the largest voter fraud operation in modern American history? If all of a sudden you're going to go after Dinesh D'Souza, Steve Bannon, Wayne LaPierre, Roger Stone, and every person that's ever had a conversation with President Trump, but you allow every single Democrat operative to run free, of course they're going to try to do stuff like this. And you're right, but I think that we have to realize that politics is just a reflection of the country that we live in. And when we do not go after the sort of widespread criminality in June, the taking down of the statues, the burning of our cities, of course, then they're going to cheat in elections. And this goes to something that Rudy Giuliani proved as mayor in the 1990s, which is the little bit of graffiti will be a murder tomorrow. And you remember this, right? And this is now playing itself out in American politics, which is, oh, the toppling of the statue in Fairfax, Virginia. That's okay. Well, those same thugs are now going to try and fill out ballots to defeat the fascist that they just wanted to tear a statue down against. It's all interconnected.
Well, I mean, actually, I think you're making my point. I don't think you're disagreeing with me. I think that that is the point. When you allow things to go on with a wink and you say, well, that's just the way it is, that ought not to be our point of view. When somebody breaks a window or sprays graffiti on something, you don't take the racist view and say, well, that's just how those people behave in that neighborhood. No, no, no. You do the opposite. You treat them the way you treat every other American. You say, we don't do that here. And you prosecute them. And then the next time they'll think twice about it. I think that, you know, that's called the broken windows theory. It was used by Rudy Giuliani to staggering effect in New York City. And de Blasio is undoing that as quickly as he can. That's right. But it is simply true, but it reflects the larger ideology, Charlie, that we were talking about, is that when you kind of laugh at something or you turn it into a joke, how is it possible that you would allow LBJ or JFK to get away with this and then let this go on through the decades? And you're quite right. That is we're where we are because of this. And I would say the statues were torn down because we didn't deal with that previous stuff. It goes on and on. But I do think that right now we have an opportunity to deal with this. I think a lot of people are going to go to prison. I'll be honest. I think that's where this is going to go.
And this has a cascading effect that only one thing feeds into the other. And then finally, we shouldn't act surprised when Republicans are almost paralyzed from prosecuting some of the stuff or fighting on the ballot issues because they want to be called, you know, because they're afraid they're going to be called racist. And that's what's happening in a lot of these cities, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Milwaukee and Detroit, you have these board of supervisors, some of which are standing very strong, but you're not even allowed to look into the voting irregularities because they say, well, you know, why do you hate black people? And that's just not even close to the intention, nor is that even close to the result of any of the reasons why we're looking into this. And they have
it's being looked into because we love black people. In other words, that's the whole point, is that this is the ultimate gaslighting, and that if you don't care about every American, you just let this stuff go. But look, we have a lot of cowards, and we have a lot of people that they're just not, you know, they're not able to fight these battles. Do you have a few more minutes, or are you going to have to go? What time is it?
I'm here for you. Let's keep going.
All right. Well, we just got 30 seconds in this segment, but I still want to go back, Charlie, to the who, the idea that there are people, actual people behind this. We don't know yet, but I think that's the bigger issue, and that's the issue we have to deal with. It's one thing to figure out this election, to figure out who won, or rather to prove that Trump won, which it seems clear he did. It's another thing then to say, who is so cynical and so criminal that they would dare to try to steal an election from the American people, who are the government? We'll be right back with Charlie Kirk.
An old cowboy went riding out one dark and windy day.
Investors seeking steady cash flow, ready to diversify? NRIA has grown to be one of the nation's leading specialists and offers 10% annualized monthly payouts with bonuses targeted at 18 to 21%. That's right. You could receive steady 10% return monthly payments with bonuses. As their slogan says, they specialize in realty investing done right. You can even use your 401k or IRA to invest. NRIA's 15-year track record and $1.2 billion in new construction development backs you. Learn how you can invest in this hard asset real estate cash flow fund today and receive 10% annualized monthly payouts with bonuses. This is something savvy investors should research and consider. Call now 800-700-5483. That's 800-700-5483 or visit NRIA.net. Folks, I got some embarrassing news to share with you, but you know what? This is just the kind of a show where I don't care. I'm willing to lay my heart, you know, on the line. Here's the issue. Mike Lindell with MyPillow, you may notice that I have a bobblehead of him near me. He's here to remind all of us that when you go to MyPillow.com, you get whopping discounts if you use the code Eric, okay? Now, there are a lot of people who haven't done that, and we have your names here. And Chris Himes and Albin pointed out to me that there's like three pages of you whose first name is Eric. You yourself, I mean, that's humiliating for me, that even though your name is Eric, you're still not willing to use the code Eric. I mean, if you don't want to use it because it's my name, use it because it's your name. But the point is that I see who you are. And I just feel humiliated by this. Please go to MyPillow.com. It's okay, Mike. It's going to be okay. Go to MyPillow.com. Use the code Eric. You're going to get whopping savings and really high quality products. Did I mention that? Thank you. Folks, Charlie Kirk is interviewing me, except I keep thinking I'm interviewing him. Charlie, let me ask you, people want to know if folks like you and me believe that Trump actually won. I had Dick Morris on this program the other day. He said, without question, he knows that Trump won. So the question, of course, becomes, how will this play out? If he won, how do we prove that he won? How do we force those opposing his victory to accept it?
Yeah, there's a couple different buckets here. The first of which, without having to get to the U.S. Supreme Court, can there be some ruling or determination of spoiled ballots? For example, signature verification, ballots that weren't sorted properly, people that were not given access. That's a very high threshold to throw out ballots, but it's not impossible. There's plenty of precedent for that. The second is, so that's kind of a more of a very technical, were the ballots sorted properly? Were the ballots given signature verification? Did you go through the same process that you did in other ones? If not, why? That could actually be very favorable for President Trump, especially in Georgia and Pennsylvania. Those are the two states where things are really, they've really been mucked up, to be honest with you. They've really been kind of thrown together. That we've been getting half answers, upload issues, people not given access. I would not be surprised if a court comes in, maybe the Supreme Court, and says, look, any of these backdated ballots are not going to be counted in the Pennsylvania election. That could change a lot of the outcome. But that's not going to be enough. The thing that all of us are waiting for, that we know exists, but whether or not we are in possession of that, which it exists, is what Sidney Powell is kind of teasing us with, is there verifiable evidence that you can present in front of a hostile judge that can show that the tabulation, the machinery, the Dominion voting systems was changing votes? Can you actually prove that?
She said on Maria Bartiromo, she said, I wouldn't be saying this if I couldn't prove it. I wouldn't be claiming this if I couldn't prove it.
And
she
look,
said that.
I know Sidney very well. And I remember when she was going on news channels just like that a year ago, and she was being ridiculed when people were saying, how can you possibly say that Michael Flynn was entrapped? And she said, oh, just wait till the 302s come out. And she was proven correct 100%. And so Sidney Powell.
What are 302s?
A 302 is a document that FBI agents fill out after they do something. So Peter Strzok Smirk, after he went into the White House and entrapped Michael Flynn, wrote down, we have to go get Michael Flynn. I'm paraphrasing here, right? And so then Sidney Powell with Judge Jackson or Judge Bear, I can't get them all confused. He declassified the documents and Sidney Powell was proven correct. Sidney Powell also wrote License to Lie. What am I saying all this? Sidney Powell is not just, you know, he's not Better Call Saul from Breaking Bad, right? She's a real lawyer. She's credible. She's been correct before. And so that's what we're all waiting for. She calls it the Kraken. We call it hope because she now is getting a lot of people's hopes up, myself included, that there will be a massive revelation that could possibly order a revote. Now, Article 3 of the Constitution states clearly, and precedent shows, the Supreme Court can do basically whatever they want. The Supreme Court, because of past decisions that you and I disagree with when it comes to gay marriage and abortion, the Supreme Court basically can come in as a 9-person, you know, czarist branch and be like, revote. And there would be no stopping them. Whether I support that kind of judicial action or not remains to be seen. I would want to see the evidence that would make them do that. I think that is somewhat unlikely. I think what is more likely, though, is that they could authorize or order some form of a recount, audit, or segmenting of ballots. And look, we're talking about 40,000 ballots that are the differential in the states that would make President Trump president. Georgia, if they just had the same absentee ballot threshold they did in prior states, Trump wins Georgia. In Michigan, if Dominion voting systems did what we think it has done, Trump wins Michigan. If in Wisconsin, an honest observer can look at what happened in Wisconsin, Trump can win Wisconsin. So these elections have not been certified, and we know the lengths that these people are willing to go to. And I want to just say one thing, Eric. You wrote the book on Bonhoeffer. It's one of the greatest books written in the last, you know, couple decades in general, let alone on World War II and Dietrich Bonhoeffer. They think they are all Bonhoeffer. They think that they are trying to get rid of a fascist leader. So think of what you and I would be willing to do to try and defeat 1930s Hitler. That's what they think they're doing. And so we have to dismiss ourselves of thinking, we have to dismiss the thinking that they think they're trying to influence an election. They think they're trying to displace a dictator. And when you start to put on that sort of thinking cap, a lot of the stuff starts to make more sense of the lengths that they're willing to go to.
That is a brilliant framing, Charlie, because first of all, it's correct, but it's brilliant because I think we need to step back and understand what you just said. Most of these people, or at least many of them, are in fact, they're not cynical old timers like Joe Biden, who kind of with a wink and a nod, they've been getting through working the system. Many of these people are crusaders who do believe that Donald Trump is Hitler 2.0 and that they would be themselves morally disgusting not to do anything they can. So that is really that's really important. It's important to know what we're up against. The good thing is that there are tons of people praying. Prayer works. I don't think God is through with this nation, and by his grace, we'll get through this. But people are going to have to stay on their knees fasting and praying. Charlie, always great to speak with you. God bless you, my friend.
Thank you.
Can you tell that I'm excited? I'm very excited. I get to talk to my friend, I'm privileged to say, Dr. John Lennox, who comes to us from Oxford, England. John, welcome to this program. I'm very excited about the news you have for us about this film.
Well, thank you very much. Very glad to be with you on this auspicious day.
Well, it's auspicious because this film is opening tonight. Is it tonight, a Fathom event?
Yes, it is indeed. It's called Against the Tide, and it features Kevin Sorbo, who's very well known to people around the world in connection with God's Not Dead, with Hercules and Andromeda. And he and I discuss matters of science and God and the truth of Christianity in two locations, firstly in Oxford and secondly in Israel.
In Israel, my goodness. Yes. I think that pairing you with Kevin Sorbo sounds like kind of a joke that I would crack. And yet you're telling me that someone has had this brilliant idea to pair the two of you, an Oxford Don in mathematics with Hercules. But we know that the secret is that Kevin is he's not just a muscle-bound guy. He's extremely bright. So if people tune into this, it's called Against the Tide. Why is it called Against the Tide?
Well, basically, it arose. It's a Pensmore film, and the Pensmore Foundation is headed by Steve Huff, who's a physicist, and he came to Oxford and sought me out because he'd read my defense of Christianity against the naturalism that floods the academy. And he was very interested in this. And to cut a long story short, we watched God's Not Dead together in his home. And I was staggered to find some of my arguments being used. And out of that arose the idea of having Kevin, now finished the film, wondering about who this Oxford mathematician is that challenges the likes of Dawkins and Hitchens and so on.
And that would be you.
That would be me. And yeah. He proved to be an excellent discussion partner. So we go around Oxford and he asks me the hard questions. And then we come to a point in the film where he says, look, this talk about God and science is interesting, but you're a Christian. How do you take that extra step? So I say to him, Kevin, the best way to answer that is to go to where it all began. So let's have dinner in Galilee. So off we go to Galilee. And the film is to be shown in selected cinemas. There is one needs to look up at the website, which is againstthetide.movie. And the tide, of course, is the tide of naturalism and atheism, which is very evident both sides of the Atlantic.
You know, I can't even remember whether I've discussed it with you, but I've been working on a book called Is Atheism Dead? If that's my wife, I'm not here. I've been working on a book called Is Atheism Dead? And it's really exactly the same thesis, the idea that we have for so long been operating, in this naturalistic, materialistic universe. And folks like you and later on folks like me have begun to see that not only is that wrong, but it's preposterous. And the more that you look at it, the more evidence comes up that it's absolutely ludicrous. And that to think that that is true is at this point foolishness. But most people have never heard this.
No, that's right. And the general impression is that science is incompatible with belief in God. I argue in this film and elsewhere that science is incompatible with atheism. And that surprises many people, that if you want to be a good scientist, then you need to start questioning your atheism. So the film takes us in that direction, and it's full of ideas. So many, in fact, that I have just finished writing a companion guidebook to it to deepen many of the things that are said in the film. Because, of course, the genre of film doesn't lend itself to crossing all the T's and dotting all the I's that you like to do. So I've written this book to go alongside it, and that should be available very soon as well. But the film's on tonight, Monday night, and on the 23rd. It's a three-night Fathom event.
So tonight, Thursday night, Monday night, and you said, and the 23rd as well. So three.
No, tonight is Thursday night, tomorrow night, and Monday night.
Oh, tonight, Friday night, and Monday night. And it's
That's
against
correct.
The tide, and people can find out locations against the tide.movie. And it is a Fathom event, in case people want to know. It's a Fathom event. So I'm glad to hear that Kevin, who's become a friend, worked with you on this, John. It's something that I would have liked to do, but I know that I'm just not in the kind of physical shape that Kevin is, and that's why he was chosen. I'm not offended. I just want you to know that. I'm working out. I'm going to get there, but I'm not there yet. But what a wonderful thing. Now, whose idea was it to pair the two of you?
Just it was Stephen Huff's idea. Stephen Huff is the founder of the Pensmore Foundation. He's a physicist, very bright. It was his idea to pair us together. And then in England, my friend Ian Morris of Karis Productions wrote the script for it. So it's been a tremendous joint effort with some very gifted people. But we've got Steve to thank for the original idea of doing a film.
And what is the Pensmore Foundation?
Well, this is a foundation that Steve set up. It comes from the French pensée, to think. Pens more, to think more, is the basic idea. And he has sponsored a number of conferences at which I've spoken in Westminster Theological Seminary and elsewhere. It's a general concern to get rational debate into the public space about these big issues.
Well, that's the thing, is that if we get rational debate on these big issues, many people are going to see that there's really only one rational side, and they've been only hearing one side of this story for so long. I'm so excited about this, John. As you know, you're a hero of mine, and I've used your books in writing many of my books, and it just thrills me that more people, as a result of this film, will become acquainted with you. Enough people know about Hercules, okay? I think, you know, about hundreds of millions of people know about Hercules, but the idea that so many people are going to get to know you and your books, I honestly think it's very important. It makes me very happy. Folks, the film is called Against the Tide. You can find out the details at againstthetide.movie. It's a Fathom event tonight, Thursday, tomorrow, Friday the 20th, and Monday. Dr. John Lennox, thank you so much.
Thank you very much indeed. And we'll see you again. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I know every crack in these dirty sidewalks.
Hey, Albin.
Hey, Eric.
This is the last segment of today's show. Can you believe what a show we had today? Have to say, if somebody had told me some years ago, you know, that I would be talking to Lou Dobbs and John Lennox, of course, a few years ago, Charlie Kirk wasn't born, so nobody would have said that. But yeah. An incredible show. I want to make sure that we mention a few things in case.
Okay. Can I mention one thing before you do?
Yeah.
This is a time capsule show. This one right here.
This is one of those time capsule shows.
Yeah.
Seriously, we've got a few things that I cannot forget to mention in case people tuned in late today. First of all, we need you to sign up for my newsletter. A lot of people have been writing saying, how do I find out about this? How do I find about that? If you're signed up for my newsletter, we send this information out to you, but a lot of people are not signed up. In order to sign up, you have to go to ericmetaxas.com. When you go to ericmetaxas.com, you'll see a place to sign up for my newsletter. That is how we're getting information out about the letters that we can write to the heads of the state legislatures in these five swing states. I put in a sample letter and so on and so forth. The only way you can get that, unless you get it off of my Facebook page, is by signing up to my newsletter. And we're living at a time now when social media is starting to crack down. We knew this would happen. It never happened to me until this morning. I tried to post something on Twitter. Twitter rejected my post. They would not allow me to post to an article. They said it was false information. Well, I looked into it. There is something in there that might be false information, but the rest of what's in there seems to me perfectly legitimate information. And I also think people can decide for themselves. I mean, you know, I should be able to send out whatever I want. They would not let me send it out. Well, when I tried to post it on Facebook, they had a big disclaimer on it, false information. And I thought, no, there's a part of it which may be false information, but this is where we are. So if you're not getting my newsletter, folks, honestly, a lot of this information I cannot get to you. I mean, I can't talk about everything on the radio.
Well, if you saw the Barack Obama interview on 60 Minutes, he talked about how the new administration is going to crack down on this false information that's going out there. So
process of that interview, he lied numerous times, but nobody's cracking down on that. So this is the point, folks, is that we're all about telling the truth, which is why I hope you subscribe to my newsletter so we can get any information we want to you anytime. Because trust me when I tell you, things are getting less free with Twitter, with Facebook. Parler is one place where I am also, but it's just important. So please sign up for my newsletter. You can also go to our YouTube channel as long as they let us have that. It's the Eric Metaxas Show YouTube channel. Please subscribe to that. Also, a shout out to our sponsor. He's standing right behind both of us, Albin. Look,
yeah, there he is.
If you go to mystore.com, for the love of Pete, please put in the code Eric. We do need your help there. He is our sponsor. Use the code Eric. You get our whopping discount. And also, if you go to mystore.com, more and more stuff is being made available at my store. I hope it ends up competing with Amazon before this is all over, because Mike Lindell's a hero.
By the way, Eric, even you don't know this, they're going to be carrying my
Right. We're not kidding, folks. They currently carry my caveman books. The prices are insane. Remember the Crazy Eddie commercial? The prices are insane.
Insane.
For all of my caveman books at mystore.com, use the code Eric. We're going to put my Muggsy books. Tim Raglan and I have done Uncle Muggsy, Yankee Doodle Muggsy, The Birthday ABC. These are gorgeous picture books. Tim's illustrations are staggeringly beautiful. Those will be on there. I'll have my book, If You Can Keep It, on there. I will have my new Bonhoeffer book will be on there, and they're available at some amazing prices. Folks, thanks for listening, and please send these videos, share them with your friends. Bless you.